You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
I'm Will Wilsonson here with MC3 News, and this just in. Breaking news. We are helpless. More on that in a moment as we prepare to go live to the scene at Mifflin County Community Church, where our own Sean Fitch is waiting with the report.
When I was growing up, I lived in this neighborhood, and it was tight. It was a close neighborhood with a bunch of other ones. We were all grouped together. Whoa, tight. We're good. And this is ironic because that driving there is kind of makes sense in a second. So we were in this neighborhood, and it was connected to a whole bunch of other ones. And I lived in a townhouse, and as a townhouse, we had like straight on. I'm going to pause to demonstrate because I can't ride without my hands. Like straight-on parking in front of every house like that. Okay, good. And so, you know, when I was 7 or 8, I was riding around the neighborhood. And back then, you were allowed to ride wherever you wanted. And I was unhelmeted. What are you doing? And I just would ride around the neighborhood. And, you know, I was a 7 or 8-year-old in the back. I told you. And anyway, okay, so I'm telling a story. Back in the neighborhood, and I was riding around, and one day I was back there, and this car was coming down the road, and sort of like Kara just came down the road at me right there. And my reaction to it as it was coming, because, you know, like it was me on my bike, and then this car, and, you know, it was a road for two cars. But for me, it felt like that car was just right there. You know, so it pushed me off of the road, not literally, but it felt like it. And I ended up riding the bike, and as the car was coming, I swerved off to my right. And because all the cars were parked right there, I swerved right into a car, hit it perfectly to completely shatter the window. And as a 7 and 8-year-old, like my first response was, crap, get out of here. I didn't say crap back then because that was a bad word. Maybe it still is for you, so don't say that. And I tried to ride away, and then it was summer, it was warm, so the windows were open. And the guy upstairs was like, hey, you kid, get back here. And so I stopped, and then a lady came out of the house, and I just broke down in tears, like bawling. You know, I'm 7 years old, I'm 8 years old. And I was completely, completely crushed. And so we went inside, and, you know, back then you like had to remember your phone number. And so I remembered it, and I told them what my phone number was. They called my parents, and my dad came to get me. And I'm going to not drive this up here. I'll walk this up. And my dad came to get me, and when he came, I remember this being shorter before. When he came to get me, we went out and looked at the car. And the car window, like I said, it wasn't cracked. It wasn't a chip. It was gone. Like, it was that safety glass, and I hit it just right that it just gone. Nothing there. And my dad looked at it, and, you know, I'm there crying, all upset. And you know, he went to the people that belonged to the car and said, you know what, obviously my son broke your window. And, you know, despite my many years of life at that point, I did not have a huge savings account. Didn't have any savings account at all. I didn't have a piggy bank. I didn't have a job. Didn't have any source of income. I didn't even have enough toys that I could sell to replace this window. And so my dad went up to them and said, I'm going to do what Sean can't do, and I'm going to pay for the broken window. Because there was no way for me to be able to pay for that. No matter how much I wanted to, no matter how hard I tried, maybe I could scrounge together some change out of the couch, but it wouldn't be enough to cover the few $100 for that window. And then my dad actually, he has some mechanic skill. He used to rebuild old cars when I was little. And so not only did he pay for the new window, but my dad took the steps to install it. He put the window in and did what I couldn't do. And there was no way for me to do it. And so that's what I want to talk about this morning, is this idea of what, as we, and I'll explain where we're going with this series if you weren't here last week. By the way, it's nice to see people not being sick. Not that you were actively sick, like in the room. Well, maybe you were, but anyway. But this idea of, you know, I fall short, and we'll talk about that in a second. But we fall short of what God has for us. And the title of this week is Fake News, because I think there's this world... No, go back. There's this mentality that's out there that, you know what, yeah, you're not good. But if you try hard enough, if you work hard enough, if you're good enough, you can get back with God. You can repay God. You can work your way back to Him. And that is just a lie, because it is impossible. Just as it was impossible for me to pay back to pay for that window. It was impossible. So my dad did the only thing that I couldn't do. And he stepped in and paid for it for me. And so we're going through this series called Breaking News. And the point that I want you to understand this week is that we are helpless. Meaning, and this is like, we're definitely still on the news of depression. Like last week wasn't very encouraging. This week isn't either. Because we're helpless. When it comes to our relationship with God, when it comes to us falling short, which again, I'll review in a second, we can't do it. No matter how hard we want to, no matter how hard we try, it is impossible, not improbable, impossible for us to repay the debt, for us to get back with God, to earn our way back to God. And so therefore, we are utterly helpless. There is nothing you can do. You can't fix it. You can't solve it. You can't get better. You can't be good enough. And we're going to come to all this in a little bit. But there is no way for you to get yourself right with God. It's impossible. So, what we're doing in this series is called Breaking News, and it comes from this passage in Mark, and you'll find it all over in the New Testament. But Mark 1:1 starts with this description as Mark describes his gospel, his view of what Jesus did. And he says, "This is the good news about Jesus, the Messiah, the Son of God." That's the NLT version. The NET version, and in other versions, translations will say, "This is the beginning of the gospel of Jesus Christ." So the word, the phrase good news or the word gospel, both come from a root word, from the Greek word, euangelion. Euangelion. It's a Greek word, and it means literally good news, or the original root of it, as we said last week, was that this idea of if you had a messenger come and they brought good news, they came to tell you something, and they're like, "Hey, I just want you to know, you know, maybe Publishers Clearing House," which do they even do that anymore? Does anybody know what that means? They're like, it sounds weird. But a guy would show up with a big check and say, "You won $1 million." You know, then that would be good news, probably. Yeah, I don't know. Statistically, people that win the lottery don't do so well. But anyway, but that would be good news. And that's the idea of this saying, "Thank you for this good news." And so what you would do is you would reward the bringer of the good news. And so this word that means the reward for good news eventually became to represent the good news itself. And so this euangelion or evangelion, if you cut out the Greek pronunciation of it, but this idea of being evangelistic or of sharing the good news or the gospel. And again, if you grew up in church, and maybe if you didn't, you've heard that word gospel. Maybe you thought of it as a style of music. Maybe it's Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Maybe you don't even know what it means. Maybe it's just some guy on TV saying, "Give me your money." But this series is looking at what is the gospel? What is the core of this euangelion? What is the core of this good news? And we're looking at four different parts to it. And every part is essential. And so since we're kind of doing this TV theme here, this TV feel with the news and our own Will Wilsonson. Did I get it right? Is that right? Will Wilsonson, yeah. I want to do a, like you would see on a regular TV show, previously on Breaking News. So I want to catch us up for if you weren't here last week, or if you're watching online, or if your live stream cut out, or whatever. But here's where we've been so far. Last week, the point was, breaking news, we are sinners. We are sinners. And we looked at two different passages about this. And again, you can go to mc3church.org/breaking news and follow along and listen to that, or watch it, or whatever you want to do there. But the first verse was Romans 3:23, and we're spending this entire series kind of in Romans 3. It works out that way. And Paul shared that this idea that everyone has sinned. And again, we talked about this last week. Everybody has sinned. You're all sinners. We are sinners. I am a sinner. And there's no, even if you never sinned, if you never committed a sin, you also inherited a sin nature. So you're sinned by what you do, and you're sinned by your genetics, by your birth. And so we all fall short of this glorious standard. And then we also saw in Romans 6:23, as we kind of wrapped things up last week, is that because of that, Paul says, when you sin, the pay you get is death. The pay you get is death. So the result of our sin is death. Physical death, like we are no longer going to live. And we looked at Adam and Eve and the story of death and when sin entered the world. But also eternal death. Like forever separated from God. And we have a phrase for that place of eternal separation from God, and it's called hell. And on the slides there in the intro, we did a series called Burn a number of years ago. And we talked for 4 weeks about hell. And it's not great. It's awful. It's horrendous. And that's the problem, is that as sinners, we are separated from God. And our destination is hell, because that's no sinner can be in the presence of God and survive. And so hell is our destination. And so that's kind of where we left last week. Like we are sinners. We're all sinners. You sin, I sin. And our sin is what separates us from God. And we are done. And so just to add that encouragement, today's week we're saying you're sinners and you're helpless. We are helpless. There is nothing that we can do to earn our way back to God. So as I said, we're going to be in Romans chapter 3. So if you have a YouVersion app or a paper Bible, we'll turn on the house lights here so that you can open the paper Bible and look there in Romans 3, as I'll share the passage in a second here. But the point here is that we are sinners, and you say, okay, what does it take? Okay, yeah, I'm separated from God. Yeah, my destination is hell. My destination, I'm doomed to eternal separation. What does it look like to fix that? How do I fix it? And you know, this is probably a big deal for us because we're Americans, and our whole country has kind of been founded upon this idea of improvement. And, you know, we existed because, you know, we can do a better job than the colonies. We could do a better job than the British did. And so that's what started that. And then we separated the North and South and said, no, this isn't right. Let's fix this slavery issue. And so we had a civil war and fixed the slavery legal side of it. And like throughout culture, like, okay, we don't like the way we're doing things. Let's improve our industry and let's bring children in and have them work, you know, unpaid for too many hours. And we're like, no, that's not good either. Let's pass child labor laws. And eventually, like, that's part of our culture, is this improvement. And so there's this idea for us as Americans saying, okay, how can I fix this? How can I solve this problem? And the answer is, we can't. We can't. You cannot solve your sin problem. You can't fix it. You can't repay. Just like I couldn't repay. Just as I couldn't repay as a little 7-year-old versus being a big 47-year-old, you can't repay that debt. So we're going to be in Romans chapter 3, verse 20 today, looking at Romans 3:20. And this is what Paul writes. And again, Paul, the Apostle Paul, and we talked about him last week a little bit. He used to be Saul. He was persecuting and killing people that followed Jesus, that were part of the church. God changed his heart. And then he ends up writing, you know, a good chunk of the New Testament. And he wrote this as a letter to the church in Rome. And in verse 20, he says, "For no one can ever be made right with God by doing what the law commands. The law simply shows us how sinful we are." Can you pull me back just a hair? I'm getting a little bit of feedback from up here. Thank you. He says, no one can ever be made right with God by doing what the law commands. The law simply shows us how sinful we are. So let's break that down into a couple of pieces. The first thing is that no one is made right. No one is made right. That's the first part of this verse. And as we talked about last week, Paul says, everyone has sinned. That word means everyone. And so today we're looking at this phrase. He says, no one, in the first part of verse 20, next slide, for no one can ever be made right with God. No one can ever be made right with God. And we'll see what that, there's a second part of that. What would that be, a conjunctive, subjunctive clause, a predicative thing? A statement of, a conjunctive statement of, it's Englishy, not mathy. Anyway, so, for no one can ever be made right with God. The point is that we can't do it. And so Paul is here, he's answering a question that's being asked. Because in the back of our minds, we're like, okay, yeah, I get it. We're separated from God. We're sinners. We're all sinners. Yeah, I'm a miserable sinner. I've done things that are wrong. I've done sinful things. I'm a sinner by birth. Okay, that's great. But Paul, how do I fix it? How do I fix it? How do I solve it? Okay, I want to fix this problem. That's not cool. You know, hell doesn't sound great. It's not. Separation from God doesn't sound like a great thing. It's not. So how do I solve it? And Paul says, no one can ever be made right with God. Paul's solution is not super encouraging. Paul's solution is, you can't. You can't be made right with God. So he says, no one can be made right with God. And this phrase, made right, by the way, it's a Greek phrase that means to be justified or to be, what's the word I'm looking for? It means to be acquitted. It's a courtroom term. Like, okay, you know what? You have been found not guilty. And so if we've done all this thing, what does it take to be found not guilty? And we had a series called Setting the Record Straight. That's also on the loop there. We really looked at the courtroom aspects of what does this look like in God's court? And so we can't be made right. We can't be fixed. We can't be goodered up. That means to make good, goodered. We can't be goodered up. We can't be made justified. We can't be made holy. None of those things can happen on our own. And so that's what Paul is answering the question is like, okay, how can I do that? He says, no one can. No one can ever be made right with God. And then the second thing, he says, no one can be made right by doing what is right. Just to clarify that, he's adding that predicate. Sure, that'll be a predicate. We'll call that a predicate to this sentence. He's adding that second part of the sentence saying, you can't be made right by doing what is right. And that's the second part of the verse there. He says, no one can ever be made right with God by doing what the law commands. And you're going to see this phrase law a lot today. And I'm going to generalize it and just call it doing the right things. Now, Paul was writing to an audience that knew the Jewish law, the Old Testament, the Old Covenant law. And so when they used the phrase law, they would often refer to the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments and the additional laws that God laid out there in Leviticus and in Exodus. And there are about 600 of them in addition to just the 10. So just obeying the Ten Commandments wasn't enough. There were 600 and some beyond that. And so there were these rules. And I think generally we have a sense of the things that are right and wrong. You know, you probably think murder is a bad thing. You know, you probably... You know, whether you lie to people or not, you probably recognize that it's wrong. Like there are things that are part of that idea of the law. That's what I want to communicate here is that this idea of saying, I'm going to do what's right. So I'm going to get back with God. Okay, I'm a sinner. I messed up. But I know what I'm going to do, God. I'm going to do the good things. I'm going to do what's right from this point on. From now on, I'm going to stop being a sinner. Good luck with that. But anyway, so I'm going to do that. And of course, you're going to find out you can't. You're going to realize you can't do what's right because you can't work. You cannot work your way back to God. You cannot earn your way back to God. You cannot repay your way back to God. Just as 7-year-old, 8-year-old Sean says, okay, I know how I'm going to solve this window problem. No, Sean can't. It is impossible. I can't do it. I can try to save some money, but it would be impossible for me because I don't even have that kind of an income. Someone else had to do it for me. And so he says, no one is made right by doing what is right because we are not right. We are not right. We are messed up. We are sinners. And so he says, the last part he says that the law simply shows us how sinful we are. And so there's an interesting thought here, an interesting concept that Paul has thrown out. He's saying that the reason, and I know there's more to this picture, but just bear with me, that the reason the Old Testament, the Old Covenant exists, and the Old Testament law exists was just as a 2,000-year setup to show humanity that we can't do it. Like, the Israelites were given the commandments. They were given the law. And God said, just do this, and I'm going to bless you. Do this, and it'll be good. Do this, and it'll be fine. And they couldn't even do that. And even people like King David, which we did a series about called After God about him, and it's not on the slides. King David was called a man after God's own heart. And yet, even King David, dude, he was caught up in all sorts of stuff. Cheating, lying, adultery, murder. Like, he did it all. So even someone like a man after God's own heart isn't good enough. And that's the whole point. The whole point was God is saying, look, do you get it? Do you get it? You can't do it. And I think my dad could have said, okay, Sean, you know, we've got to get this window replaced. It's going to rain eventually. So we can't just leave it broken. We can't just leave it out. So I'm going to give you the next week to get, it was probably like $200, to get the $200 to fix this window. And 7-8-year-old Sean would have, you know, again, probably looked in the cushions of the couch, probably pulled out, you know, my He-Man action figures and tried to sell them. I actually tried to have a business at one point on the street corner. I'm like, you know what's really annoying? When lint gets caught in your Velcro shoes. And all of you that are like, yeah, right? See, and so then you're like, oh, you wore Velcro shoes, huh? That's how it was. Like, Velcro shoes, you know, it was like, well, I can't really figure out how to tie my shoelaces. So you wear Velcro shoes. I also had Ruse once. I had a pair of Ruse. And Ruse were awesome because they had a zipper and you could put a quarter in there. To carry your quarter in your shoe in that zipper pocket. It was awesome. Anyway, so I was like, wouldn't it be cool? You know, I'm sure that's obnoxious to other people because, you know, you go to strap your Velcro and your shoes and you're like, oh, it didn't strap because there's that lint in there. And I'm like, I'm going to pick your lint for you. So I actually set up a little card table on the corner and said, I think it was like 25 cents to pick the lint out of your Velcro.
How old were you?
I was probably like 9 or 10. I was probably somewhere in there. No, it wasn't last year either. But the point was, nobody paid me to do that, by the way, just in case you were wondering. Actually, that's not true. I have a whole hidden secret business empire that I'm running under a pseudonym. But, you know, so I would try something like that. Like, what would it take for me to earn the money? And the issue would be my dad could give me a week and my dad could give me a month. And as a 7-8-year-old, I couldn't do it. I would still, it would still be an impossible goal. And see, this idea of thinking that, okay, I know, God, I'm separated from you. No one likes that. I don't want to go to hell. So I'm going to do these good things, and I'm going to earn my way back. And it's just impossible. And as we talked about last week, I mentioned, I've shared this so many times before, you know, it's the idea of saying, okay, that's fine. You're good at jumping. Well, I want you to jump from America to England. And even a professional long jumper can't do that because it's impossible. And so that's what Paul is saying here. He says that no one is made right by doing what is right because we are not right. And the whole point of the law, the whole point of all these rules is saying you can't do it. You are a loser. And as Paul said last week as we looked at the end of the passage, he says, yeah, I want to do the things that's right, and then I do the wrong thing. And I want to do the thing that's not right. I don't want to do what's not right, and then I do what is wrong. And he says, I keep doing the wrong thing, and when I want to do the right thing, I keep doing the right thing. No, he never does the right thing when he wants to not do the wrong thing. And he's like, who can save me from this? And he says, thank God, the answer is in Jesus Christ our Lord. And the point is that you can't do it, and we can't do it. We can't earn our way to God because we are helpless. We need someone to do it for us. So the breaking news is that we are helpless. And so, again, as I mentioned last week, you know, for some of you, you've never heard any of this. Some of you may be watching online, whatever. This is a brand new idea of, like, what is this gospel? What is this message of Christ about? Many of you have heard that. Maybe you've made the decision to follow Jesus, to believe in his death on the cross. And I don't want you to check out, because I want us to, as we said last week, to remember what Jesus has done for us. Because it's so easy to forget and be kind of like, yeah, that was a long time ago, and it doesn't matter as much anymore. No, it matters so much. Because we can celebrate the fact that, yeah, dude, you're right, Sean. I am helpless. I was helpless. There was nothing I could do. And, you know, you think about a baby Babies are helpless. They need someone to do something, to do everything, frankly, for them. And so I want us to remember, like, yeah, this is what it was like. And again, if you've never heard this before, just take it in. But the point is that we are helpless. We cannot repay God. We can't do it. We can't be good enough. We can't go through the law. We can't follow the rules to earn our way to God. And if that's depressing and that's disappointing, it should be. It should be. And that's what God is setting up, what Jesus is setting up here for us as we go through these next few things, is to say, yeah, you can't do it. And that's what makes what I'm going to do for you so incredible. So, just to clarify, to break this down even more, that when it comes to earning your way to God, when it comes to being good enough, when it comes to doing enough, when it comes to working hard enough, I want to break it down into little parts just to realize that our piggy bank isn't big enough. Our piggy bank isn't big enough. Like, there is no way to repay this. There is no way to work this off. There is no way to earn our way back to God. And again, I want to break it into some little, maybe smaller bite-sized pieces. And so the first piece is that our obedience can't repay. And what I'm talking about with obedience here, what am I talking about with obedience? I'm talking about this idea of trying, I mean, basically what I was saying, just following the rules, doing what's right, doing the good things for God. Because I think there's a lot of people that are out there. And if you ask someone, you know, what does it take to get to heaven? And you ask that question, most people are going to say something to the effect of, as long as my good outweighs my bad. As long as I do more good things than bad things. And like we said last week, maybe it's not good versus bad in our own life, but maybe we're grading according to the world. Well, as long as I'm better than most people, and since we've got Hitler, we can always say I'm better than him. Like he's always at the end of the scale. Well, at least I'm better than Hitler. So I'm better than someone. And we kind of have this scale of saying maybe that's what it looks like. And the point is, you can't do it. You can't earn your way back to God. That is wrong. That is fake news to say that, yeah, if you're good enough, you can make your way back to God. If you're good outweighs your bad. And so this whole idea of our obedience, I'm going to do good things for God. I'm going to be an obedient person. I'm going to follow the rules. I'm going to follow the law. And James writes this in James chapter 2. He says, for the person who keeps all the laws except one. So everything, which again, 610, 620, 630 laws. He says, if you keep all the laws except one, you're still as guilty as a person who's broken all the laws. For the same God who says you must not commit adultery also said you must not murder. So if you murder someone, which, you know, hopefully you don't do that, but do not commit adultery, which is good, you still have broken the law. Do you get that? Like this idea is all it takes is breaking the law once. Then you're a lawbreaker. And, you know, prison, I would assume, is not full of people that broke every law. Frankly, most of the people probably broke less than 10% of the laws that are in prison. But they're still considered lawbreakers. And what James is saying is that, you know, the only way for this to work, for being good enough, for being obedient enough to God, is that you need to do it all perfectly. Because as soon as you break one law, you're then a lawbreaker. And all it takes is breaking one law to then say, oh, you cannot be in God's presence because you were a sinful person doing sinful things. And so James says, look, you can't. You just can't do it. All it takes is one. And I would just say that for, like, maybe we do a lot of good things, a lot of right things, but the one, if we do one wrong thing, that's it. And the way I wrote this down here, I think this is for this one. That if you have if we have a test, okay, and I don't know, I mean, it's been a long time since I've been in school. What is that line between passing and failing? Like, what's the percentage? Is it 60%. So 60% is passing or 60% is failing? 60% is passing. Does that sound about right? Okay. So 61 and up, 60 and up is passing. So, you know, and like a 95 is an A, but a 61 is a D. Yes? Okay. All right. We still use D? Do we use those A, B, C? You don't use Ds. Yes, we do. A. If you have an A, a B, a C, a D, or an F. We left E out. We skipped E. Okay, good. Just making sure we're still on the same page. It's been a long time. So if you get a passing, okay, if you got a 60 or above, you're passing. But here, let's say we take this exam, and it's got a lot of questions on it. I'm not going to tell you how many because I don't have to do math, so I'm not going to do that. But there's a lot of questions on this exam. And we're done. We put down our pencils. We use pencils. You don't use pencils. A number two pencil. They feed the Scantron through the machine. See, if you're old like me, you might know what those. You fill the bubbles in. The machine goes, grrr. If you've ever done that, it's really fun. Grrr. And you don't want to hear that. If it goes, grrr, that is bad. It should go, when you stick it through the machine. See, and again, if you don't know what that is, ask old people around you. But there was this form, and you had to fill in all the bubbles with an A, B, C, D, E, or F, whatever your number of things were, and you fill in the bubbles with a number two pencil on this green sheet that was like this big, and then you put it in this machine, it would feed through. The teachers would do this, you didn't do it. And it would feed through, and it would, if there was a wrong answer, it would go click and like leave a little red mark. And so again, is bad. If it goes, or if it goes, hey, sounds pretty good. That's pretty good. But so say you get your Scantron in, and forget the Scantron if that confuses you. But if you finish, we got our grades back, and you've got a 50% failing. But let's say we get together, and we're like, what did you get? Oh, what did you get? I'll not tell you if you tell me. Okay. I got a 20%. And then you know, you say you got a 20%, and your friend's like, you are such an idiot. Oh, I pity the future for people like you. You know, your friend's like, I got a 50, dude. I am so way better than you. And for you to have like this weird contest about like your 50 versus my 20%, like, you know what? We're all still failing. It doesn't matter. And that's what people try to do when it comes to being good and following the law. Like, oh, I'm going to do more good things. And as long as I do more good things than them. And we're all going like, hey, look at me. I got a 40% and I'm so much better than Hitler. He had a 2%. Yes. But you're still failing. Because all of us, as we looked at last week, all of us have sinned and fall short. We're all falling short. We can't do enough. And so James is saying, you need to do it all right. Your Scantron needs to go, every day. As soon as it does once, you're done. You're a lawbreaker. And again, that doesn't even account for the fact that we inherit our sin nature, which I talked about last week. Over in Galatians, Paul writes this to the church in Galatia. He says something similar. He says, those who depend on the law to make them right with God are under his curse. So he's like, I'm going to be good enough. I'm going to do the right things. I'm going to obey. I'm going to be a good person. That's how I'm going to get to heaven. That's how I'm going to get back in my relationship with God, because sin has separated me from God, sending me to hell. I'm going to be good to get back. And he says, you're under God's curse, because the curse is what we talked about last week with Adam and Eve and the sin. When the sin entered the world, the curse spread. We are all now doomed because of sin. He said, for the scriptures say, cursed is everyone who does not observe and obey, and I underlined this word, all the commands that are written in the book of the law. He says the same thing. So James says it, Paul says it here, that if you don't obey all of them, you're going to hell. You're under the curse. If you don't obey every law, he says, so it is clear that no one can be made right with God by trying to keep the law. For the scriptures say it is through faith. Oh, hold on to that thought, spoiler. It is through faith that a righteous person has life. It is through faith that a person is made right with God. But we're not going to talk about that today. So our obedience can't repay. We can't be right, good enough. We can't be a good person. We can't be following God. It's just not enough, because we have to do it all perfectly. And we've already, you're already failing. We're already failing. And you know, this idea here that Paul talks about, maybe it's the 40% and the 20%. It doesn't even work that way. Paul's saying it's pass fail. All you have to do is mess up one and you're done. It's pass fail. So our obedience can't repay. Now, this is slightly like it, but a little bit different, and that is that our good deeds can't repay. And so maybe you kind of would equate those together. Maybe you want to. Everybody's like, it's time. You can all take your pictures. Anyway, but this idea of being made right with God, we're like, okay, I'm gonna be good. I'm going to be a good person. But maybe you have this second category that's maybe a little bit different. This is, I'm going to do good deeds. Like, I can't obey God's law, but I'm going to be nice to people. I'm going to be a good enough person. I'm going to be nice enough to people. I'm going to do enough good things that by doing enough good things, God's like, oh, that's really good. Come on into heaven. That forget the sin thing. You're good. You can do good things, and that'll solve it. And maybe that's, you know what, I'm gonna help out my neighbor. You know what, I'm gonna get, put money in that guy's meter because his meter was expiring. I'm gonna go help, you know, the person down the street shovel their driveway. I almost said shovel their lawn. Mow their lawn, shovel their driveway, shovel their lawn, mow their driveway. Whichever you want to do. Do whatever you can. Because the idea is I'm going to do these good things. I'm going to help them. I'm going to be good, and God's going to be so pleased with me. I'm going to earn that. And, you know, that's kind of what our culture has built. You know, again, not that my kids ever do this, but they're all here. They're all in the room. Hey, guys, good to see you all. It's kind of interesting, and again, maybe my kids don't do this, I'm sure your kids don't either, but something good gets done, and then shortly after, there's a question. Do you follow me? Like, hey, look, I took out the trash, and no one asked me to. Can I? Do you see those things sometimes? They don't always do that, and they actually just do it because they're fun. They like to do those things to be goofy. But you know, this idea of saying, I'm going to do a good thing, and therefore I've earned something from my parents. You follow me? I took out the trash. No one asked me, can I stay out an extra hour tonight? You know, I cleaned up the kitchen and did all the dishes. Can I play video games for 2 more hours? And so there's this idea, and that's kind of built into us. And as we look at Ephesians here, Paul says, no, you can't even do enough good things to repay. You can't outweigh them. Paul says in Ephesians chapter 2, verses 8 to 9, he says, God saved you by his grace. And what is that? Well, I'll explain in a second. By his grace, when you believe. There's this belief thing again. And you can't take credit for it because this is a gift from God. It's a gift from God. Salvation, or righteousness, or being made right with God, or making your way to heaven, is not a reward for the good things we have done. So none of us can boast about it. Paul says, when getting to heaven isn't about doing good things. It's not like, oh, you did good things, here's your reward. No, Paul, right here, the Bible says that is not how it works. And again, go out there and say, how do you get to heaven? Oh, if I do enough good things, I can earn my way. The Bible, which most people aren't really familiar with, when they kind of base, like, well, I'm going to just follow the Ten Commandments. By the way, okay, follow the Ten Commandments, great. Tell me what they are. That's a great way to start. Okay, what are the Ten Commandments? Well, murder and adultery and coveting, whatever that is. False witnessing. Okay, great. Good job. Hope you keep all 10 of them to earn your way to God. But Paul says you can't. It doesn't matter. We can't do good things. It's not a reward for doing the good things. It's a gift. When it's Christmas time or when it's your birthday and we celebrate the fact that you did nothing but just lived to that point, your mom did all the work. We celebrate that and we say, here is a gift. You didn't do anything to earn it except maybe live that long. But that's what a gift is. It's not deserved. It's not earned. And Paul says our salvation, the hope we have for eternity with God, isn't because of what we do. It's not our good deeds. It's a gift. You can't take credit for it because there's no way to earn your way to God because our piggy bank isn't big enough. So our obedience can't repay. You can't be a good person, do the right things, follow God, do all that. Like, I'm going to be good. You can't do good deeds for other people, and I'm going to make sure that my good deeds outweigh my bad deeds, and God will be pleased. No, you can't. It's a gift. The third thing is that other religions can't repay. And I'm just kind of throwing this in there because I think we have, especially, again, when you talk about fake news and what the world has to say out there, that, well, all roads lead to God. As long as we're religious, people are religious, then they can make their way to God too. And again, I come back to this issue. If we're all sinners, like, so people that are in other religions can jump further than we can to jump from here to England? Like, how does that work? And so there's this idea that, well, you know, as long as people are honest about their religion, and I know this sounds cruel and heartless in this world, but these aren't my words. Jesus, and it's going to sound very trite, and you've heard it so many times, but Jesus is the only way. And in Acts chapter 4, the early church is starting, and the apostles are out spreading the word about Jesus and telling people, like, he isn't dead, he's alive. He actually came to save us, and we need to believe. And sorry, spoiler, we'll get to that in a couple of weeks. But he came to save us, and the Jewish religious leaders said, stop! Stop talking about Jesus. You need to stop talking about him. Just ignore that. And they said, no, we have to, because salvation is found in no one else. For there is no other name, meaning Jesus, under heaven given to mankind by which we must be saved. There is no other name. There is no Allah that will get you to heaven. There is no Krishna or Hindu or you know, I'm messing them all up right now. There is no other religion that will get you to heaven. And that sounds cruel and heartless. That sounds like, well, what about those people? Then I say, go and tell them. Let's go and tell them. And then if that's not enough, Jesus himself said in John 14, Jesus told, he was talking to his disciples, he told them, I am, and I underlined this, I am the way, the truth, and the life. I am the way. I am the only way. And just to clarify that again, he says, no one can come to the Father except through me. And again, if that sounds cruel and really constricting, and I get it, I understand that. You know, if this is the first time you're watching, listening, like, okay, I get that. But I just want to be clear that it's not a matter of all of us just kind of doing our own thing. By the way, if Jesus made this claim, you can't say that all religions will make their way to God, because you have to say all but one. Because Jesus is the way, Christianity, this is the way we gain access to the Father. So you can't say everyone goes, because no, Jesus himself said he's the only way. And if he's not the only way, then he's a liar, so why are we even doing this? So, just wanted to throw that, and if you want to talk about that some more, we can, I realize, but I just wanted to be clear that it isn't like, hey, yeah, everybody gets there eventually. No, sorry, Oprah, it doesn't work that way. Because Jesus himself said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And so we need to decide, okay, is Jesus right or not? And if he's not right, seriously, there's a lot more we could do right now. Is it snowing yet? It's going to be a beautiful, snowy day outside. You know, go and do that. So, going back to the topic here, our piggy bank isn't big enough. Our obedience can't repay. We can't do enough following the law, being good for God. Our good deeds can't repay. We can't do enough good things. Other religions won't do it. They won't repay this debt. We have this debt. We can't repay it. And the next thing is that our spirituality can't repay. Now I'm kind of bringing it back into the let's say, Christian world. With people that are like, okay, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to earn my way to God. Because you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go to church. And you know what? I'm going to go to church a couple times a year. I'll definitely be there at Christmas and Easter. And then there's that MC3 church. They sometimes don't even meet on Christmas, so I don't even know what's going on now. How am I supposed to earn my way to heaven? Or maybe I'm going to go to church every month. Because by going to church, God's going to be pleased with me. And he's going to say, well, then come on in. Thank you for being spiritual. I'm going to pray. I don't actually go to church. I don't actually plug in, but I pray a lot. My question is, who do you pray to? You know. Okay, good. Thoughts and prayers. Yeah, great. Whatever that means. I'm going to read my Bible. I've been reading my Bible. Great. That's wonderful. And all those things are great. But if you think that by doing these things, you're going to earn your way to God, and God's going to go, I am now pleased with you. Your YouVersion streak is now at 14 days, and 15 is the limit. When you get to 15, boom, you're in heaven. Welcome. And can I just be completely honest? And I was just confessing this yesterday. First of all, I'm a creature of habit and streaks and patterns and all that. So YouVersion streak is kind of, I like it. I know it's not a symbol of my godliness. I know it's not a symbol of getting to heaven. It's not. But if I break my streak, and I'm not saying this to sound arrogant either, my streak is almost all the time broken on Sunday. So YouVersion breaks my streak of like 75 times reading the Bible in a row every day, and it's broken on Sunday. Every time it's broken, it's on a Sunday. And so, like, apparently this doesn't count to YouVersion. So I apologize for my lack of spiritual maturity that on Sundays I don't read my Bible as I should. At least I don't read it in my... But the church has a YouVersion plan, and that's the one I use to put the point on here. So anyway, okay, sorry. I'm getting it off of my chest. I'm feeling good now. All right. But the idea of our spirituality and this idea of saying, I'm going to do these churchy things. I'm going to do these religious, these spiritual things. And then God will be pleased with me. And Jesus had some very hard things to say to people in his time that lived like that. And there was a group of religious leaders called the Pharisees. And they were the Jewish religious leaders. And their job was to kind of direct other people on what it looks like to be a good God follower, because they didn't believe in Jesus as the Messiah. But what does that look like? And he says, well, I'll just tell you what he says. In Matthew chapter 23, and I'm just going to read the first five verses, but I'd encourage you, look at, like, Jesus is, he never sinned, which is good, but he says some harsh things to these Pharisees in this passage. And he starts out and he says to the crowds and to his disciples, he says to the teachers and religious law, and the Pharisees are the official interpreters of the law of Moses. He says, these are the guys that their job is to study the law, which we already talked about. You can't really obey all of it, but their job is to study. He says, so practice and obey whatever they tell you. Listen to them, because they're teachers. So he actually tells them to respect their authority, which is an interesting thing, even though they're not following Jesus the way they should. So that's a whole other issue. But he says, practice whatever they tell you, but don't follow their example. For they don't practice what they teach. They crush people with unbearable religious demands and says, and never even lift a finger to ease the burden. He says, what they do is they're so interested in looking the part, in looking good, that the outward appearance, and he goes on and calls them like tombs. He's like, you're full of dead bones on the outside, but you've been washed clean on the outside, but they're still dead and rot inside. And he calls them, he says, you bring someone to follow God, and then you make them twice the sons of hell as yourself. He says, you bring people and then end up sending them to hell because you've added these rules. You've made it about this outward thing. I'm gonna be spiritual. I'm going to do all the right things. I'm going to pray at the right times. And they would actually have these things called phylacteries, which was a box that they would wear on their head and their hands. And it was where they would keep the great Shema, Deuteronomy chapter 6, the law in these little boxes. And they would show how spiritual they were by having bigger boxes. Well, my box is bigger. With digital Bibles, it's not quite the same, but... dude, there are some big Bibles out there. And someone that carries a really big Bible, they must be really spiritual. And Jesus is saying, no, it's not about this outward appearance. It's about your heart. He says, everything they do is for show. And he just goes on and blasts them. Because he says, I'm tired of people trying to be spiritual for show, trying to do these things that God is going to be pleased with, to say, no, it's not good enough. It's about your heart. It's what's going on in here. And your heart, as we said last week, is deceitful and wicked. Our hearts are sinful. So he says the Pharisees' issue is that they're teaching people to be like, oh, you want to earn your way to God? Well, make sure that you are reading the Torah at least 2 times a day. And make sure that you're praying 5 times a day. And make sure everyone sees you when you pray, because then that will be even better. And make sure that you go to the synagogue once a week. And make sure you do, and he was saying, do all these outward things and then God's going to be pleased with you. And Jesus is like, no, that's not how it works. Doing your devotions does not change God's love for you. There's nothing you can do. Hey, this sounds familiar. To make God love you more, and there's nothing you can do to make God love you less. And by the way, all these things that we're talking about, we actually touched on this on week 4 of the Deceiver series with the life of Jacob and about him trying to earn his father's love. But he says, don't be like them. They're just fake. Over in Matthew 15, Jesus says this to the same group of people. He's talking to the Pharisees. And he calls them, he says, you hypocrites. He calls them hypocrites. It's not a very popular term today. It wasn't a very popular term back then. Isaiah was right when he prophesied about you. And he's quoting Isaiah now. He says, these people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. And so if you come in here and you raise your hands to the music and you are singing as loud as you want, and maybe even tears flow, if there isn't an actual thing happening in here from what Jesus did in your heart, that means nothing. God isn't like, oh, wow, you were really emotionally moved today. And dude, we can move you emotionally. Like, that's one of the things that I know that the worship band and the worship leaders get together. Like, we're not here to psych you up. We can psych you up. I can tell a really sad story that doesn't mean anything about anything. And we're like, oh, I felt that today. So what? Do you feel because you're feeling? Do you think because you're feeling that you're closer to God now? And again, don't get me wrong. None of these things are bad. I'm saying if that is the way you feel you can earn your way to God, then you've missed it. If you feel like today I was really weepy, Jesus is going to be so proud of my emotional brokenness that today I'm definitely going to be with him in heaven. He says, no, it's about what God has done in your hearts. Because you can't do it on your own. You can't be emotional enough. You can't worship enough. You can't sing enough. You can't read your Bible enough. You can't pray enough. You can't come to church enough. You can't do enough because it's impossible. Because our piggy bank isn't big enough. So our obedience can't repay. You can't be good enough. Our good deeds can't repay. You can't do enough good things to earn your way to God. Other religions can't repay. You can't. You know, other faiths don't get to God. Our spirituality can't repay. You can't do enough Jesus-y things. And again, don't get me wrong. You should be doing those things. But if that's how you're earning your standing with God, you've missed it. And I think I can say this in general terms. I think you probably would understand it this way. And especially if you're a parent. That your kids, and let's go back to the infant thing. Dude, what value does an infant bring? Frankly, an infant and a toddler. Let's put them all together. They're cute. But all they do is poop and scream. But that doesn't change a parent's love for their child. They still love them. That this idea of saying, you know what, I love you despite who you are. And that's how God looks at us, saying, it's not about what you do or don't do. My love for you is great. So, anyway, finally, going literally to this idea of our piggy bank isn't big enough. And that is that our money can't repay. Our money can't repay. And, you know, there's this idea of, okay, I really want to earn. And this often, it's interesting. You see people when they get closer to the end of their life. This is something that you'll see happen. Okay, I'm getting close to the end of my life here. I want to make my way to heaven. I haven't really done any of the other stuff, so I need to make sure I give to the Salvation Army. I need to make sure I give to missions, or I need to find some good deed that I can give my money to, because by giving my money, then God will be like, oh, okay, good. You've hit that dollar, that threshold. You've crossed that line. Now, you can come into heaven. But our money can't repay either. And in this passage in Mark chapter 10, Jesus looked around and he said to his disciples, and this is right after telling the story to the rich young ruler and about the Good Samaritan and all this stuff. No, this is not a Good Samaritan. He says, sell what you have and give to the poor. And the guy went away sad. So anyway, Jesus looked around and said to his disciples, how hard it is for the rich to enter the kingdom of God. Now, it says that this amazed them. And the reason that this amazed them is that there was kind of this assumption that rich people are blessed by God. If you have more money, then you have more blessing by God, and therefore God is going to be pleased with you. And Jesus kind of flips that. He does a lot of turning of the tables, literally and metaphorically. And he says, no, it's actually hard for rich people. And Jesus said again, dear children, it is very hard to enter the kingdom of God. He says, In fact, it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich person to enter the kingdom of God. And what he was saying is that the money isn't the solution. Money doesn't get you in. There is no dollar amount that says that's what's going to work. And frankly, some people that have money think that, well, I've got the money. That means I'm good. That means God is pleased with me. And Jesus is saying, no, having all that money is not a sign of God's blessing. And the people were thinking that. And so he says this. So he says money isn't good enough. And this is the kind of the piggyback. And this is going to be our segue. It says the disciples were astounded. Then who in the world can be saved? His followers saying, Jesus, wait a second. What does it look like to be made right with God? If the rich people can't do it, and if it's like going through a camel going through the eye, who can do it? Who in the world? This is impossible. How can people, if we are that helpless, if we can't earn our way to God with our money, if we can't be good enough to get to God, if we can't do enough good deeds, if we can't be spiritual enough, if we can't plug into a religion that will get us to God, who in the world can be saved? Because this is the key question. Because you're helpless and I'm helpless and we can't do it. You can't do it, Nemo. No matter how hard you try, you can't. We are helpless, and the disciples are going, we're helpless. Well, who in the world can be saved? What is the point of this, Jesus? Jesus looked at them intently and said, next slide, there we go. Humanly speaking, it is impossible. He's saying you're right. And if you're sitting here listening to this or watching online or listening, whatever, and you're going, wow, what in the world? We're helpless. How can we be saved? From a human perspective, you're absolutely right. Who can be? Who can be made right with God? No one. You can't do it. What's the point? Jesus says, you're right. From a human perspective, it is impossible. But not with God. Everything is possible with God. And that's where we're going to go next week. Because it is impossible. You can't earn your way to God. We are helpless. Jump to the point slide there. We are helpless. We can't do it. What's the answer? How are we going to do this? It's impossible. It is. But nothing is impossible with God. And so next week we're going to finally get to a little bit of hope. But before we do that, we've done this newsflash thing last week. I hope you had a chance to look at what was posted on the wall in the lobby. You can do that on your way out today. But you've got a paper around you. Grab one of those. And what I'd like you to do is I'll pray, and then I'm going to give you a few minutes, and then we'll send you out. Since it is impossible, since we are helpless, since we cannot get to God on our own, there are probably people around you that you want to see turn their hearts over to Jesus. And if you don't know what that means, obviously we'll get to that next week. But they're not going to be able to do it on their own. Because it's impossible humanly speaking. But God can change any heart. And so what I want you to do is take that paper. This one's very simple this week. Is just fill in that blank. I'm praying to see blank follow Jesus. And these are anonymous. So don't be like, I'm praying for Kirk Gensel. You can pray for Kirk Gensel, that's cool. But don't write any names, or you can just write a first name, or it can be like my uncle, or it can be like, you know, my cousin or my coworker. We don't want anybody to be like outed here or anybody to feel really awkward. But just fill that in, and then you're going to take it when we're done here and just flip it upside down because it's anonymous, put it in the basket on the table in the lobby there, and then next week you'll come in and they'll be pinned up there and we can see. And who is it that we're praying to see God bring to a relationship with Jesus? And by the way, when you fill in that blank, pray for them. Because they can't do it on their own. It's impossible. But with God, all things are possible. So let's pray. Father, thank you so much for what you have done for us. And again, these last 2 weeks have been depressing because we are sinners and there's nothing we can do about it. We are just helpless. And I pray that as we just let this fester, I think that's the right word, as we let this soak in and bother us, that we would see, just as the disciples cried out, who in the world can be saved? We would realize that it is impossible from our perspective because we can't do it. We can't earn our way to you. We can't pay, no matter how hard we try, we can't pay to make our way back to you. We're helpless. And I pray as we consider that, we realize the beauty of what Jesus has done for us. That as we continue through this series, we will open our eyes to that. And then when we hit fifth Sunday, we would worship in celebration that Jesus is alive. But I just pray that for us now, that we would be able to sit in this and be bothered by it, just as your followers were. In Jesus' name, amen.